Bob, it's all you.
We're caught in a trap. I can't walk out.
No, baby.
Because I love you too much, baby.
Ma likes this.
Love you, baby.
Why can't you see?
Why can't you see? Oh,
well, what you doing to me?
It was a joke.
When you don't believe a word I say.
We can't go on together with suspicious minds.
And we can't get
those two high
dreams
with suspicious minds.
So if
Paul, you want to jump in here?
I would like to find a nice place to lay down.
All right, bring it down, Nelly.
But I will continue for this next hour.
You're putting in.
He's grinding it out. He's with Willis Reed. He's come out at halftime.
Some good work here. Some really good work. Let me ask you guys a philosophical question. Can an MVP of a Super Bowl or a World Series or the NBA Finals or the Cup Finals come from a losing team?
Yes.
Paul, should it ever? Can it ever? Is there ever a case for it?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a case for it. Here's the thing I will tell you. Can I tell you why the Super Bowl MVP is different than the Conn Smythe?
Yeah.
The Conn Smythe is for the entire playoffs.
Correct.
So I don't, anybody that's arguing that Connor McDavid hasn't been the most valuable player, no matter what happens tonight, of the entire playoffs. Now, I think it's a harder case to make if it's just the like the championship game.
Yeah.
Like, for instance, to me, if the Cardinals would have won the Super Bowl over the Steelers, Larry Fitzgerald probably should have been the MVP of that game. And you could make a case that maybe he was the MVP of that game anyway, but when they lose, you give it to Santonio Holmes or whoever. Was it Holmes?
It was him.
Could have been James Harrison.
Could have been Ben.
Could have been Ben. They had a lot of people.
My point is, the Conn Smythe Trophy, I think, is a lot less of an argument than if it's just for the championship or the championship series. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because the Conn Smythe is for four rounds of the playoffs.
I mean,
and Connor McDavid, honestly, is very, you know, he's not that far off setting a record for the most points in the playoffs.
He's gonna win. BetMGM has him at -3,000.
Right.
All the headlines today, Bob, said McDavid is a lock no matter what happens tonight. Do you agree with that? That he will win it?
Yeah,
that
I do. Will. I think he will, and he probably should. He's embarking on Wayne Gretzky territory for all time points in a playoff tournament, but. I thought going into the series, and especially when it was 3-0 Florida, that Bobrovsky was the choice. He played in every single game. He had locked down teams outstanding. And this is a goaltender they actually wanted to get rid of last year. So after three, he was my pick. And then all of a sudden, he's given up 18 goals in five games. I know a couple were empty netters. But, you know, he'd have to put in a performance of a lifetime tonight to win. And I'm not going to rule out if they do win, two to one or 1-0, and he is the absolute difference, then I may have to rethink that.
You, for your opinion, he has to put on the performance of a lifetime. But I think almost matter what happens tonight, McDavid is going to win Conn Smythe.
But if he wins all 16 games in goal, and other than those three games in this series, he has been terrific in his save percentage and everything. And let's say there's a 42, it won't be because they play tight. But let's just say there's a 32 save effort in which he's made some unbelievable saves and they win 1-0, hypothetically. Would you still give it to McDavid or would you have to consider Bobrovsky for 16 wins?
Yes, because of what Paul said. This is for the whole playoffs. And
you don't think Bobrovsky's been good in the whole playoffs? He's won 16 games if they win tonight.
He has. He hasn't been historically great, but he's been good.
Up until these last three games, he's been right there.
These last three games count. He's got like a 903 save percentage. He has not been great.
I understand that, but there have been games where McDavid hasn't scored points either.
You asked me, though, and I say for the whole playoffs, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I think
McDavid. He should win the Conn Smythe.
But the last three goalies that have won this, Vasilevskiy, I think, in 21, there's probably no doubt he was absolutely the most valuable player of that series. In 2012, Jonathan Quick, if you remember from the Kings, I think there's no question he was the most
valuable. But they won.
My point is, you're talking about Bobrovsky. I think Bobrovsky was really good in the first couple of games of this series, but I don't know that he's been like so spectacular this entire playoffs.
No, yes.
He's on the level of where, you know, if I think of that Kings team or that Tampa team, even though that Tampa team had a bunch of stars, I think of Vasilevskiy.
I'll tell you.
I think of Quick.
There are some guys from losing teams that should have won MVP. Nobody in the NHL has done it since J.S. Giguere, I think, in 2003. He won the Conn Smythe despite the fact his team lost in a game 7, I believe. LeBron should have won it the 1 year he took the Cavs to the finals when it was like, who was that? Who was the little guy on his team? Matthew Dellavedova.
Dellavedova, yeah.
People like that. He took them to the finals and then to like 5 or 6 games against the Warriors, for God's sakes, and they lost. That one jumps out where I thought a guy from a losing team could have won it. Thurman Thomas jumps out as a guy from a losing team who could have won it. When the Bills lost to the Giants all those years ago, he was the best player on the field, I thought, by a million miles. So Jerry West, we talked about.
Yeah.
He won it when they lost because he was ridiculously great. So there are instances where it can happen. But for me, you have to be historically great either in the game, if it's a game award, or in the playoffs for a playoffs award. And McDavid's been that. He should be a cinch to win it.
Right. I think, honestly, like I said, it's so much different in hockey because it's an award for the entire playoffs, you know?
Again, though, you can make a case.
You could for Bobrovsky. If Bobrovsky goes out tonight and they get outshot, you know, 47-21, right, and he wins the game 3-0 or 1-0 even, you could make a great case for him, Bob. But the problem, again, is McDavid's been the best player by far.
For 16
you can days. Also make a case because Evan Bouchard has put up numbers that no defenseman's put up in playoff tournament. He's another guy who's been extremely important to them, but he's in the shadows of McDavid. So is Zach Hyman, who's had an unbelievable playoff run. McDavid is the centerpiece. He's going to get it because of the point total. But I can tell you that Zach Hyman has had some very important goals along the way.
You seem to be having a lot of reservations.
No, I'm trying to throw out the other thing. I think it's going to be McDavid. I brought up the question
because
I think.
Do you think it should be no matter what?
I think it will be.
Do you think it should be?
I think, again, if the scenario is what you described with Bobrovsky just now, you'd have to really consider a goaltender winning all 16 games. And again, aside from those three that have changed this series, his goals against, I believe, was like 928. That's a pretty significant goals save percentage before all this. Now it's down to 905, and that's after he's gotten lit up 3 days in a row. So,
man, I can't believe that both of you guys think Florida's going to win tonight.
I do.
It's just things are trending so poorly between the goalie falling apart, between Edmonton just riding this wave of momentum, and the looks on the faces of the Panthers going into that third period and then toward the buzzer the other night. They look like they're just stunned. They look like dead men skating. They do.
Bobrovsky didn't practice yesterday.
Yeah, he was mysteriously gone. I don't know what. He's probably seeing a therapist. They all do at some point.
Just giving him rest. I mean, he's been a long
season. No, but he's always out there. This is the first time he's missed it throughout the course of the entire playoff.
I think the Oilers
Spencer Knight in his place.
They might win by blowout tonight.
No.
I think the Panthers are broken.
The only blowout we have is Paul Zeiss here today in 93.7 The Fan Studios. That's it.
Me versus the toilet. That's been a blowout.
I think it's going to be one of those tight games. I would expect.
Here's what should scare you the hell out of if you're a Florida fan. is that Edmonton scored 5 goals the other night, and McDavid had 0 points. That's what should scare the hell out of you. He had nothing to do with any of those 5 goals.
The Panthers have to get back to what they did in the first 3 games. If they do that...
That feels like a long time
I understand
ago.
That, but they can. At home, they've been pretty good about doing that kind of thing. And if they you know, the first goal is so important. We always talk about it. But in this scenario, this first goal may not come until, you know, late second period. And then all of a sudden, the sphincter game comes to life. You know, everything gets tight.
Oh, man, I think that's going to be in play. I think it already is. It's game day.
I will say this. If Edmonton goes up 1-0,
it could all fall apart.
It could really fall apart quickly for
Same is true of the other way. I think then Edmonton feels pressure that they got to play more of an open game, and that could lead to Carter Verhaeghe coming down or Sam Bennett or Reinhardt or anyone else getting a cheap goal because you feel the pressure to try to do something heroically.
It almost does. I will acknowledge this. It feels almost too obvious that Edmonton's going to win. Almost too obvious that what if the Panthers just... I mean, the bottom line is they are playing for a cup on their home ice.
Right.
However they got here.
Now, let's ask this question. Is it more helpful to be at home or an away team in this scenario?
Don't home teams usually win game sevens in the NHL? I would have to look that up. I'm pretty sure.
But I mean, who would you rather be Edmonton with all this momentum or the home team? Because you could silence that home team very quickly and they can turn on their team.
I would rather be Edmonton and
Paul,
having
you?
Won 3 games in a row.
The last 2 away teams in game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals have won. The Blues beat the Bruins, and the Bruins also beat the Canucks.
And then the Penguins beat the
Red Wings? We're talking about game 7. Yeah, on the road, yes.
On the road.
But that was back in 2009. We're talking about most recently. But yes,
I'm saying, I think the Penguins did it, you know. I would much rather have... That's a really great question.
We also didn't mention the Penguins Canadians meltdown game 7. I'd rather be on the road for game 7.
A lot of people would agree with that.
Except that the records say you're better off at home.
Yeah.
Then again, you have teams like the Capitals. I'm looking at their all-time record in game 7s at home is 3-9. Are you kidding me?
I would say one thing that's pretty important about that though. It's really important to note that the home team has home field advantage because they've been the best team, or home ice advantage because they've been the better team, right?
Yes.
Like in other words, yes, home teams win a lot in game sevens, but the reason they're at home in a game 7 is because they have a better, you know, theoretically, they have the better record.
Another reason why I like Florida tkachuk, because I think this is a Matthew Tkachuk kind of night. I think this is the kind of game that the way he plays, how he can get under your skin, and what he can do offensively is something that in this sort of game can elevate him into being the hero of the night, you know, the number one star. I like Matthew Tkachuk a lot, and I like him better in these kinds of games.
All right. Well, our predictions are in. Nelly, who you think wins?
I'm with you, Joe. I'm going with the Oilers. They have zero pressure on them.
I totally disagree with that.
I think they have a ton of pressure
on them.
Game 7
of the Stanley Cup Final.
And this is how many years has Connor McDavid been in the league?
If he doesn't win, that's a huge albatross still on him.
But they're not the team that blew the 3-0 lead. They're not the team that has been shaking.
In the end, it won't matter.
He's right, I think. Paul, what do you think about that? This is it's game 7 of the final, and he's never won. So if he loses this one, it won't matter that he got here this way.
No. Right. That's the whole point. I think there's lots of pressure. I think I tweeted this out the other night when Edmonton won. I said, the beauty of game 7 is we can always make the storyline somebody choked. Either the Panthers choked, you know, in spectacular fashion, or we could say McDavid had one game to win the cup, and he choked one way or the other.
Especially if he gets no points.
You know, it's funny. I heard the guys before us talking about choke jobs. Where this Panthers choke job would rank all time?
It's an all timer.
I think it's worse than they threw out some ones. I think it would be worse. I don't even think Golden State choked against Cleveland. For one thing, it was 3-1, not 3-0. For second thing, you had maybe the best player of all time or the second best player of all time on the other side. And in basketball, one guy is actually good enough to pick up a team.
And then Draymond Green got suspended for game five, which they lost.
My point is, I don't consider that one of the all-time chokes. Like,
Atlanta 28-3 over New England.
No question. That's
28-3. What would be worse, this or that?
Oh,
I think
28-3 is never going to go
this,
away.
I think this is worse.
This because it's you had four games, four chances.
Yeah.
In 28-3, I mean, you basically screwed it up, but that's one game. That's a bad one.
I think this is
also
worse,
Tom Brady.
Tom Brady was on the other team.
But you can't blow a 28-3.
Well, of course not. We're talking about.
I don't care how
we're talking about choke jobs.
Choke jobs is because guess what their coaching staff did? They played right into the hands of New England that night. They made so many terrible decisions that aided the Patriots.
One that I hate.
This might be the worst in history.
It's pretty bad. One that I hate bringing up quite often. Thankfully, the Atlanta Falcons have made people forget about it a little bit. It's the 35-3 Oilers-Bills game.
Do you remember the Penguins were victimized once after leading 3-0, I think it was. It wasn't
the
Stanley
Islanders.
Against the Islanders. Yeah. Eddie Westfall got a goal. They had lost four straight games. It wasn't a final, but it was a game seven.
No, okay. that one, it's so rare. It hasn't happened in these finals since the 40s.
But
in
here's
the
my question.
Cup finals.
Even if, say, the Panthers do win tonight and McDavid doesn't, like it's a 1-0 game, are people really going to say McDavid choked even though he's setting all of these points records?
Yes.
He showed up the entire
time. They're
going
to say Connor McDavid still hasn't won a cup.
And they're going to say in the biggest game of all, he didn't produce what they expected him to produce.
They won three games
that
in
may
a row.
Be unfair
they had everything going for them.
Because he's still elite. In every aspect. It's just the way it is.
What if he has a hat trick and they lose 6-5? That's different.
Right. Although it'll still be true that he's never won.
And that's what people will focus on, the fact that he never won. But, there's another local one that I think is a pretty big choke job was 13-9. That's a huge, by West Virginia.
That was a gigantic choke.
I mean, yes. And the thing about it is, Rich Rodriguez completely froze up in that game.
Yeah.
Like, early in that game, I mean, speaking of choke jobs, how about my man Pat McAfee missing those two early field goals? That was, he was like really good that entire year. They get down inside the 5-yard line twice and come away with 0 points because McAfee gags on two field goals. Honestly, I think if they go up 6-0, even if they go up 3-0 or 6-0, their game's over. The next time down, they probably score and they're going up 13 and then it's off to the races.
We just saw one of the worst choke jobs in history. Rory had made 496 putts in a row from 3 feet and in, and he missed two. One was a little longer.
Well, I'm going to defend the second putt only and the one on 18 because if you look at the way that putt was, he has to make it. But I'm going to ask you this. He would have taken less heat if it was a 7-footer and he missed it, The 2-footer, but it had an amazing – I saw a video on this just – the kind of undulation that was in that putt, it's a tough putt to make. No excuses.
The first one?
The first one was terrible.
The first one
allowed the second one to happen.
I think that's as bad of a choke job as we've ever seen.
But I also credit DeChambeau because he had to do what nobody thought he could. That up and down from 55 yards is one of the hardest bunker shots to hit. Knowing that if you go by the hole, it's going to roll away from you.
There's always the other team, though. I mean, the Bills beat the Oilers. They did some amazing things, but Rory choked. It's not even, when I say that out loud, it sounds so mean, but it's just, that's what happened. You don't make 496
like,
in a row and
honestly,
then miss.
And that's
it was because of the pressure.
Right. And to Joe's point, I could probably come up with 9 or 10 plays in the second half of that Bills game. If any one of them goes the other way, the Oilers win.
Right.
I mean, you got to make one play.
Right.
Now, it is what it is. But my point is, it's one thing if a team comes from behind. I don't agree that every time a team comes from behind, the other team choked. Sometimes, but in that case, that was a choke job. In West Virginia, 13-9,
I agree.
A choke job. I'll give you another choke job. You're up 21 at home against Cincinnati. And lose by one because you kicked to Marty Gilliard, and then you
and then
after all that happened, you can't execute a simple hold on a field goal on an extra point. That's a choke job.
Bleacher Report has the greatest choke jobs in history. They have Oilers Bills number two. They have John Carney after the Saints scored on a Hail Mary to tie a game. He missed the extra point. Do you guys remember that?
I remember that.
It was one of the most improbable endings. Listen to this.
Where do they have 28-3? I'm just curious on this list. They have to have
I don't know if it was in time for that, but listen to this choke job. Bill Tilden, 1927 Wimbledon. Ron was covering it, Bob.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to this. He was up 6-2, 6-2, 5-1, 30 love. So he won the first two sets. He's up in the third, 5-1, 30 love, and he lost the match.
That's not good. That's bad.
You're
essentially
incredible.
A point away, and then you let it all fritter away, and you lose three sets in a row.
He's got Chris Webber from the 93.
Timeout.
Yeah. The problem with that is the more you look at the documentaries and all that crap is that he had people on his bench telling him to call timeout. You can see the guys up there yelling
and
at him.
And in that moment,
saying, call timeout.
If you see that from your bench, you're going to take it for what it is.
That's what I say about that one. Paul?
I thought that's not why they lost the game. I think everybody froze up in that. You know what I mean? When he called timeout, everybody kind of froze up. But, you know, before he even called the timeout, if you remember, they threw inbounded it to him.
He traveled.
He took like seven steps.
That was a choke.
That was a choke job. That was the pressure was getting to him. But the timeout stuff, you know, interestingly enough, other time North Carolina won a championship, was it Freddie Brown?
Freddie Brown.
Passed it right to.
That was one.
Passed it to Worthy, didn't he?
I mean, he would just. That's a freeze job right there. You don't know what you're doing. You just lose track of everything.
I mean, again, it sounds horribly mean, but that's the word for it, is you freeze up. We all can relate to it, by the way. You freeze up and do the exact wrong thing or are unable to function at a critical moment.
Like J.R. Smith?
J.R. Smith is another one who called timeout. You remember that?
Yeah.
For the Lakers? They're number five when they didn't have timeouts left. Their number five is the Phillies with 12 games left in the 1964 baseball season, had a 6.5 game lead over the Cardinals and lost.
That's a big one, too.
That ain't easy to do. Greg Norman at the 96 Masters, Bob.
Well, that to me, golf-wise, is the biggest one of all time because he had a 6-shot lead entering that final round.
And he lost by
and
five
he lost,
strokes.
So Faldo made up all of that because, you know, and you guys play golf, so you understand how this works. When things start going bad, there is nobody to call upon to replace you, to run for you, to hit for you, for nothing. You can't, it's all you. And he was battling himself and his swing, and it just became worse. And to me, it was hard to watch at the time because I thought, I know that feeling. And he's playing for everything.
Next right. Next one up is the 1908 New York Giants. Ron, again, on hand for this.
Was he at Cook's Forest or no?
He might have been. Merkel's boner, Bob.
What?
That's what this one goes down in history as.
What did you say?
It's known as Merkel's boner. Somebody make sure Fred Merkel realizes he has to touch second or he will be forced out, nullifying the run and causing the game to be declared a tie. He didn't touch second. He never touched second, and it went down in history as that, Merkel's boner.
As a boner.
Yeah. Paul, you remember that one?
No.
I don't think I do.
I don't think I do. Gary Anderson, 1998.
He had missed a field goal all year.
It had to have been choking. It had to have been. There's no other explanation.
But do you remember the flight of the ball?
No.
See, I would... Choke would be what you saw with the Steelers and Colts when their idiot kicker missed one. Vanderjack.
Yeah.
He missed that so wide right.
He choked. That's an all-timer.
This was a little different, I think. It wasn't as if he just missed. I don't know. I mean, you can call it whatever you want to call it.
But he overcooked it. He hooked it. That was definitely a product of nerves.
I agree. He missed it by a million miles.
Nerves are sports.
Some of this stuff is stupid. The Bills and the Music City Miracle. I don't think
that was a well-executed play at a time when no one thought it was coming.
And then they picked the Stanford band play. Nobody choked on that. It was a freakish occurrence where the band ran on the field. Who made this idiotic
the band
list?
Choked. Well, the man thought it was over.
I think what they're saying is because they allowed that touchdown to happen, that all they had to do is tackle somebody.
I know, but the trombone player was in the way.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. I would agree with you. I'm trying to figure out what they're saying there. That's all.
The Red Wings.
The trombone player got whacked.
That maybe the trombone player was there for Merkel's boner too, Bob. The 1942 Red Wings. They were the last team to lose a 3-0 lead
Toronto
in the Stanley
beat them.
Cup final. Yep. I'm looking at a photo of that. That is unbelievable. What else do we have here? Sacramento Kings. Get out of here. 2002 Sacramento Kings. That's the year that Tim Donaghy cheated for the Lakers, right?
Well, that's the thing. They did kind of blow it up, for sure.
Jackie Smith dropping that pass. Was that a choke job? The sickest man in America?
Right in his breadbasket there.
That's
just to me. I don't know about
now
that
Now we're
one.
Starting to talk about it. You know what I mean?
What about Red Sox and the Yankees?
That one's up there. That one's up there.
Lead.
Yeah. The only thing I always say about that is when I looked at that series, and this is why baseball is a little different than hockey or basketball, the Yankees pitching staff was on fumes. And so I kind of knew they were going to have a hard time. You know, like if it would have been me, whoever was supposed to pitch like game 4 or game 5 or whatever, I would have held them for game 7, like giving them as much rest as possible. Because really, it wasn't that shocking if you look at each game individually in that series.
Yeah,
that the Red Sox were able to come back and win because the Yankees pitching was in they were on fumes. It was really easy to see, and I kind of thought if this gets to like game 5 or 6, the Yankees are in trouble because I don't know if they have enough pitching to finish.
Yeah,
but it is. I mean, you're up 3-0. You got to win.
This guy's got the Patriots undefeated team going down to the Giants.
No, that was a ridiculous miracle play by
the same two teams had played in the last game of the year and it went down to the last few plays. What is he talking
but
about?
But you have a helmet catch.
Yeah.
David Tyree does out of nowhere.
That wasn't a choke.
No, that was just a weird play that ended up winning it for him.
I think the two greatest chokes in team sports history are going to be the Falcons at 28-3 and this, if it happens.
Yeah, I would have to say so, given the fact that I think if Florida looks back at this one, if they do lose, that game 4, they kind of mailed it in that night. That's the game that you want to try to – you don't give them any momentum at all, none. And you can say, well, we have the comfort of having all these extra games that they have to win. But once a team gets on a roll, it can be dangerous. And that's what they always tell you. It's the hardest one to win, and it is, especially when you're up 3-0. You got to end it quickly. Cannot give that team a chance, and they did.
No NBA team's ever blown a 3-0 lead. It's happened a few times in baseball, a few times in hockey. But this is up there, man. This is up there.
All right, here's an
Paul,
interesting –
can you think – go ahead, Bob.
No, I was going to ask you over and under just because I saw this, and I thought it was interesting. Over and under on how many penalties will be called tonight? Do you know what the number is?
Probably.
I bet you it's 3.5.
Three and a half. How did you know that? Did you see?
I just guessed.
Okay.
The under.
Total in the game. So you know what kind of game it's going to be. That helps Florida if that's what they're expecting.
I'll say this. I kind of thought this series changed in the third period of game 3. Because up until that third period of game 3, the Panthers had pretty much completely just smothered the Oilers and made it really, really difficult for them to score. They were frustrated. Nothing was going their way. And if you remember in game 3, they scored 2 goals against Bobrovsky. It was almost like they finally solved Bobrovsky, yeah, and they had a bunch of more chances to tie the game,
right,
in game 3. And I remember watching that and saying, you know, we've seen it where a team sort of figures it out and it just completely changes the series. So now all of that gets thrown out the window. I mean, if Edmonton scores first, that's going to be a problem for Florida because I think that really gets in their heads. If Florida scores first, and we get midway through the second period and Edmonton still hasn't scored against Bobrovsky, then it really starts to get in their head.
That's what I'm saying. At that point, they may start to be heroic and go against what the, you know, because it's still only one goal, but then you feel pressure, grip the stick a little harder, go in deeper, pinch when you shouldn't. All of a sudden, there's a 3-on-2 the other way. So these first goals are going to be very important.
50-minute mark on The Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge, Route 19, Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. And What's Cooking, brought to you by your local Pittsburgh insurance agent, local GEICO rep, Tim Hester.
Thank you, Mr. Hester.
Very kindly. Bob, you're the only one of us three who would ever be in this position.
Did I say it?
Yeah.
Little Earth, Wind, and Fire, good for your soul.
It is.
We all could use some soul food. We all could use some soul food, especially on a Monday like this when...
I don't think you can take any food the way your stomach is going.
I can't. I'm not doing... There's going to be no food probably for the rest of the day. There's going to be probably... I'm going to have another episode where I'm going to try an OD on Pepto-Bismol.
Yeah, I would drink some more of that if I were you. I think you're doing well. We appreciate you gutting this out. No pun intended today.
Listen, 10, the first break was like whatever time it was. I was like, okay, I'm checking out. And then I was like, no, I'm going to endure. Let me see if I can make it to 11.
And then I got to
noon and I was like, you know what? I'm here. I might as well just finish this as the best I can do. And
this is like the Kellen Winslow game all those years ago in Miami. Remember that? They had to pull him off the field, Bob?
The flu game.
The Chargers
one? The Jordan flu game and the Chargers game. And there's been a number. How about Byron Leftwich?
Bob and I carried you down the hallway during the one segment.
Who was the Knicks guy?
Willis Reed.
Willis Reed.
Yeah. This was historic. Can you imagine Paul turning down $90 million? It looks like Stephen A. Smith is doing just that. He wants $25 million annually, reportedly, and they're only offering $18 million a year.
Let me preface this by saying this. I root for every journalist, broadcaster, commentator, whatever, to get every single dollar they can possibly get. So what I'm saying is, great for him. I'm happy for him.
But it doesn't necessarily trickle down like it does in the NFL.
If you get one, but my point is, If you say what I'm about to say, people say, oh, you're just jealous. That being said, I have no idea why anybody thinks he's worth that. He obviously must be, but to me, I just don't. I've never got it. And the thing is, for a while, it was kind of charming, his shtick or whatever you want to call it. But he's just become, like, over the last 5 to 7 years, just a total blowhard, like Skip Bayless, like some of these guys. It's like, why does anybody pay these guys?
Well, I'll give him credit because he's a workaholic. I know that. And yes. He goes through a lot of things, and he has very strong opinions, which I guess – and, you know, listen, they would not be offering that money if they were losing money. They're making money. Just like in the NFL is Brady worth $38 million? I'll say yes, because Fox believes he'll bring in
– here's us three. Has there been one game in your lifetime that you said, I'm going to tune in because of who's broadcasting it?
No, but this is different because this is opinion-based.
I get that, but you're talking about Brady. I'm talking about like all this money they're paying color commentators or whatever. Like if it was somebody other than Tom Brady. I mean, there's so many times I'm watching the game, I forget who he's even talking about.
No, and I think there's a lot to that. The game will sell. If Tom Brady is in the booth for a game between Arizona and you know, who else? Cleveland, and Cleveland stinks, and they both stink.
But
I don't think it matters.
My thing is,
they'll never be in for a game.
It's just like Pat McAfee. I don't get it.
I don't get it again.
Maybe I'm not the.
But they're bringing in money. They must be.
But let me ask you something. If someone offered you $18 million a year and you're turning it down,
if I could get 25, yeah.
That's the thing.
How about if they say no to that?
He obviously
has leverage. You don't think he'll get money elsewhere?
He obviously has leverage, or he wouldn't be turning that down. And he, you know, might be a ploy where they say, okay, how about if we come up to $22 million? And then, okay, well, I'll settle with that. I don't begrudge anybody.
I don't either.
In any
profession, have a chance to get it,
get their money, go get paid. I have no problem with that. My point is, and maybe I'm just not the target demographic. Pat McAfee, Stephen A. Smith,
Skip Bayless. All of them.
Shannon Sharp, even. I don't get any of it. I just don't understand why these guys, like, anybody really wants to watch that nonsense.
I mean, they're really not doing things much different than we are.
No, but they're yelling.
It's hot. So are we.
Yeah, but we don't do hot takes, though.
We don't?
I don't believe we do. That. We don't say I don't say outrageous things just to be outrageous. Do you?
No, but we have. I mean, it depends on how you define
hot
take.
Do they have to be outrageous? Does every day have to figure out outrageous?
That's what they have to be, is outrageous. You know, now Pat McAfee.
They had a topic. I just noticed the same topic we had. Who's your MVP? Is it Connor McDavid? And they had some sort of debate.
Pat McAfee, I will say this, has sort of come back to earth a little bit. You know, he was way over the top. But now, if you watch his show, it's kind of innocuous. But like Stephen A. Smith has always been the forefront of, if I yell the loudest and I'm the most animated and I say the most crazy things, people will pay attention to me. I've never, ever approached, you know, I never approached this job like that, ever.
We have to go.
But you can get to that level.
Oh, of course. When I'm like
Joe started on a rant today.
Right, but he really believes that. And what he was, you know what I'm saying?
So you're telling me that you don't think they believe half these takes?
No, or they don't even know what they're talking about. They just, you know, like there's the one day he was screaming and yelling about something, and he had like six facts wrong in his rant. But it doesn't matter because it was a funny rant and went viral and people loved it.
We have to go.
Bye, Joe.
Thank you, Paul.
Have a nice time golfing today. I look forward to you breaking 80.